A recent Pew study found that 40% of adults ages 18 to 24 belong to the so-called boomerang generation. Young adults who move back in with their parents. It's a huge number and one that raises practical concerns for households and for household budgets. Parents with rejuveniles are wondering, should their growing kids pay rent, chip in for groceries, or promise to get a part-time job in the meantime? And what should parents do to help lay down the new ground rules? I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, how to talk to your boomeranger about life back in the nest. Our guest is Suzanne DeBaca. She's Vice President of Wealth Strategies at Ameriprise Financial. And we want to hear about your experience. Are you living with a grown child at home again? And how do you navigate that new set of rules? How's it working out? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And our email is talk@wpr.org. And Suzanne DeBaca, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, you've got some firsthand experience with our topic today. Your stepson, I guess, moved back home at one point after graduation. Tell us your story.
Indeed. My stepson graduated from college last December, and like many college graduates, didn't have a job right out of the gate. So he decided to move back home, and we were delighted about that. But his father and I had always been clear with him all along the way through high school and college that once he graduated from college, we would expect that he would start to become financially independent. So we let him know that he could live rent-free for 6 months, but after that period of time was up, that we'd have a conversation about him potentially paying rent or chipping in.
Now, I think for a lot of parents, having the conversation that you just described would require a certain amount of chutzpah. How did it go for you?
Well, for me, it might have been easier than for parents who don't routinely talk about money. I've spent my whole career in financial services, and I do a tremendous amount of writing about talking about money. So we have a pretty open conversation, and it wasn't a surprise to him. We laughed about it a lot. But he's known all along, as has his brother, that, you know, we are confident that they're going to be able to stand on their own 2 feet, and we're going to do everything we can to help them, but we really want them to be independent. But even then, it's tense. It can be a little embarrassing, in fact. I had a number of my colleagues and friends say to me, "You're joking, aren't you? I can't believe that you're thinking about charging your kid rent. Do you need the money, or, you know, why are you not being supportive?" And we saw it very differently than that. We saw it as a vote of confidence in him, and maybe a motivator a little bit to get out there and be looking for a job.
How did you come up with the 6 months figure? I imagine the solution is different for every family, but how six months?
Well, the 6 month period of time, I think, was really just kind of a guideline that we use when at Ameriprise Financial, when we're talking to individuals about any kind of a money conversation, whether it's supporting their kids, providing some kind of financial support to parents or siblings, that seems like a reasonable amount of time for an individual to kind of get their act together. So if you're supporting somebody in the interim, I don't think the expectation was that we'd cut him off in 6 months, but in 6 months period of time, we really wanted to revisit where he was with his job search, figure out how's this new living situation with you being back home going? You know, are we all comfortable? Because he came back from college being a very different person, you know, in a good way, but a different person than he was when he left at age 18.
How so?
Well, I think after 4 years of college, most individuals have grown up to a certain extent. They're used to living an independent life. So even if they're in their own bedroom, you know, they haven't had a curfew. They've been managing their own money. They've been making their own decisions. And so some of the rules of your household that you had when they were a teenager may or may not seem appropriate, including some of the financial decisions and discussions.
Well, I suppose, on the other hand, having been out in the real world and been managing their own money, they might be a little more open to the idea that they're contributors, too.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I know that you were interested in this story because of an article that I had on Time.com yesterday called Your Adult Child is Moving Home, Should You Charge Rent? And one of the things that I mention in that article is, you know, that you should have a discussion with kids about what might they want to chip in for. What was fascinating is that comments on that site actually came in from kids who were living at home who were saying, you know, after I got a job, I stayed at home, but I volunteered, you know, to chip in with groceries, or I took my parents out to dinner. I offered to pay them a little bit of rent. You know, it might have been less than they'd have to pay out in the open market, but it's heartening to me to see a lot of these children saying, when I was able and when I got myself in a good space, I saw myself as a contributor to my household, and I wanted to help my parents.
Well, at first blush, the idea of charging your adult child rent, it might seem radical, but when you look at some of these numbers from the Pew Research Group, 48% of Boomerang children report that they have paid rent to their parents, and 89 say they've helped with household expenses. Those are pretty big numbers.
Those are pretty big numbers. It's fascinating. At Ameriprise, we did a study called Money Across Generations, and we looked at the level of support that baby boomers were providing both to their adult children and to their elderly parents. And what we learned was that 93%, that's 93% of Americans are providing some sort of support to their adult children. But the concern is that while people feel great about helping their families, sometimes helping your family member out financially can actually be derailing your own retirement savings or your own progress towards the future. So it's actually very important when your kid moves back home for you to understand, you know, what is this actually, you know, what kind of impact is this actually having on my finances today? What impact is it having on my financial future? And how do I make some of those trade-offs or decisions versus just saying, sure, honey, come back in, have your room, I'll do everything, and then suddenly you find yourself, you know, not on track to meet your own needs later.
Well, we know there's probably more cleanup, more chores to do when you've got extra people in the house, but in terms of money, tell us about some of the added costs that can stack up when an adult child moves home.
Well, it can be more than you actually initially think about. And in fact, there might be different expenses involved than when your kid was a teenager living at home. One of the things that I would encourage anyone to do is to really be clear about what is involved in having your kids come home. So there's increased utilities. There are groceries, and I adore my stepson, but that kid can eat. So, so we knew that there would be additional grocery bills, and you know he sometimes wanted things like, oh, we want a pineapple, we want blueberry, a lot of expensive things, you know, that I don't think he was getting on his college budget. Suddenly, ended up on my grocery list again. But what about the cell phone? What about technology bills? You know, are they going to expect a cable that you don't already have? What about their car payment? What about their car insurance? Gas money? You know, if a kid is coming home and they're unemployed, they may have lived on campus without those things, but that's another expense. And, you know, then there's a couple other things that don't seem obvious. What about their clothes? You know, are you going to expect that they're going to come along when you go to the mall the way that it was in high school? Entertainment. If they go out to a movie on the weekend, are you going to fork over, you know, $20 the way you did in high school? Or are you going to say, you know, you really need to get a part-time job. I'm not going to pay for your bar bill. But then the last thing that many people aren't thinking about, and this is part of the reason that kids are moving home, what about the student loan payments?
Right.
You know, if your kid is coming out of college and they have a significant student loan burden and they have not yet found a job, does that come back to you? So when you look at all of these things, that's a big list. You know, are we talking about $500 a month? Are we talking about $1,500 a month? And depending on who you are and what your income is, that can, you know, even that amount of money is not insubstantial when you think about the other obligations that you have.
Well, it's interesting to note in the same Pew study that large majorities of these boomerangs, they're satisfied with their living arrangements by 78%. That's almost, you know, all of them. I wonder how parents are feeling. Do you have any sense, aside maybe from the finances or maybe including them?
You're making me laugh because when I read the Pew study, I noticed that they showed the statistics from the kids' side, but not the parents' side as well. So yes, the adult children are saying, I love this situation. This is great. You know, 44% of adult children living with their parents say they're very satisfied. But anecdotally, when I talk to friends, when I talk to colleagues, when I do research, I hear a lot of parents having very mixed emotions. And generally, it is not that they don't like their kids or they don't want to support their kids. It tends to be that there are unspoken resentments, concerns, or expectations that they're not getting out on the table. And so, you know, I might hear people saying, well, my kid has been home and all he does is sit on the couch and play video games and eat my groceries. When is he going to go look for a job? And my question will be, well, have you actually had the conversation? No. Like maybe you could have the conversation to say, I'm happy to do this, this, and this, but I'm expecting or hoping that you will do this, this, and this so that I see that you're moving towards financial independence or at least moving in the direction of a job and getting on track. So I hear people having concerns about you know, what is happening with my kid? Are they taking the steps that they need to? And then sometimes, yes, in fact, concerns over the added expenses, taking away from some of the plans that they had for savings or diminishing their own lifestyle. And it's complicated and it's confusing. You know, these are when you have parental emotions here, it's never black or white.
Yeah, and I suppose that ideally you'd have these conversations you're talking about before the adult child moves back home so that you've sort of got the lay of the land and you don't have to negotiate it when it's more awkward.
Absolutely, but that is not necessarily common in our culture. People don't always talk openly about money. So going back to my own situation, even before my stepson graduated from college, we had the conversation, and it was pretty casual. I said, well, you know, your dad and I have always said, you know, you've got your bedroom back for 6 months, but we need to talk about how much support we're going to provide you when you come home and you don't have a job. For example, are you going to need money for gas? How are we going to get you to those interviews? You know, do you want me to keep paying your car insurance? Let's do a budget and talk about that. So we actually sat down at the very beginning and had that conversation. It's not always smooth. It's not always easy. You know, my stepson was, he had very mixed emotions about accepting money. He wanted to be on his own, but he was broke when he got out of school. Yeah. So we had to talk about it. And I said to him, I'm going to write you a check every month for X amount. Because for you to come to me every time you need $20 or $50 or to go to your dad, that doesn't feel good when you're an adult. That you know, that nickel and diming and always begging for money, you know, that can feel very uncomfortable. So we actually worked out a payment plan essentially to him while he was looking for a job. And that helped us clear the air. But we also had the conversation that at the six-month period of time, we're going to see what this looks like.
And how did it go over? Did your plan work, or did you have to kind of patch it up along the way?
Well, it backfired in some ways because we really enjoyed having him at home. You know, we love our kid, and apparently he enjoyed living with us. We had a lot of fun for 2 months, but he was very motivated to find a job, regardless of the rent situation. And when he got a job, it was in Kansas City. We live in Minneapolis, so he packed his bags and left. And we thought, oh no, bye. You know, so we were sad to see him go. And I think that this is where it gets complicated, is a lot of parents really enjoy having their adult children come back home. But, you know, as a parent, your question is, you know, is this about me? Is this about my feelings? Or is this about them, their needs, and about helping them become a financially independent adult?
Well, our guest this hour is Susanna De Baca. She's Vice President of Wealth Strategies at Ameriprise Financial. And she has an article in Time.com about your adult child moving home and whether you should charge rent, if you want to check that out. And we're talking about just that issue. What happens when your adult child moves home? Should they pay rent? Should they have to chip in for groceries? Should there be a time limit that they have to find a new job? And how do you negotiate that new area? You can reach us and tell us about your experience and your own ideas at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we talk with columnist and commentator E.J. Dionne Jr. about his new book, Our Divided Political Heart. This hour, we're talking about the boomerang generation and how to negotiate that new set of rules.
I don't want to just leave it till the end of dinner.
Oh, I hear that. Hannah, your mother and I have been talking, and we feel that it may be time... How can I phrase this? Well, we see how well you're doing at work, and you really seem to be figuring out what it is that you want.
We can't keep bankrolling your groovy lifestyle.
My groovy lifestyle? But I have no job.
No, you have an internship that you say is going to turn into a job.
A clip there from the HBO series Girls. Some parents trying to have that difficult conversation that our guest is trying to help us with this hour. Susanna De Baca is our guest and Vice President of Wealth Strategies at Ameriprise Financial. And Susanna, does that clip make you smile?
That does make me smile. But I think to the point that you were making before, if you've never had a financial conversation with your kid about the expectations that you're going to have for them, and you let these emotions build up and then just blurt it out at a dinner, right? Mm-hmm. That can be a big shock. So the question is, how do you start having these open, honest money conversations with your kid even before they think about moving home or along the way, so it doesn't come as a complete shock to them and you need to just get it all off your chest at one period of time?
Well, let's take some phone calls now. We've got Chris joining us from Columbus. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I was a boomerang kid, but there were very high expectations when I returned home, not from college, but from the military, and had to have a job, pay rent, and help out with the chores around the farm. And I now have children, and my eldest is 10, and we've had that conversation very explicitly for a number of years now, where my wife and I have very clearly stated that when they turn 18 and graduate high school, if they don't have a full-time job or aren't going to school or the military, they will not be living with us. And they have chores, and they earn a commission, not an allowance, because we tie work to earnings. And we reinforce the knowledge that if you don't work, you don't eat. And it's better to teach that in a loving household then wait until they're teenagers or adults and they learn these lessons the hard way when they get a car repossessed or fall behind on credit cards or and so that's the approach that was taken with me and I take. It can be harder. Some people call it harsh, but it's very direct and everybody knows what the expectations are.
Sounds like you've got some clear communication going on. And I guess, Susanna, Chris is doing it pretty well. He's starting early.
Yeah, I think that that's terrific. And my guess, listening to you, is that if your kids really were in emergency situations and needed your help, you know, you are a loving parent, and you'd be happy to, you know, to give them the support they need. But the real job of parenting you're doing is to say, you know, you can do this. We expect that you will, you know, and here's the motivation for you to get out on your own 2 feet and develop good financial habits. So how do your kids respond? I'm interested to know, do they think it's harsh, or do they think it's great that you're treating them like adults?
Well, currently they think it's a little bit over the top, and we have to have the "we do this because we love you" conversation. But at the same time, you know, we also are very honest. Like, for instance, my son is doing chores and mowing lawns for other people and stuff to earn money for Bible camp, because we were honest and said, "Sorry, that's very expensive to send you to a week away, and if you want to go, you have to earn about half the money."
Well, I think having the open conversations, having them understand what the expectations are. Yeah, you know, kids might say, "Well, Mom, Dad, how come you're not just forking everything over?" But in the end, I think that kind of motivation helps kids to get up off the couch and to do the things they need to do to prepare to be financially responsible adults in the real world. So congratulations. Keep it up.
Well, thanks a lot, Chris. And Suzanne, it sounds like Chris, you know, he's starting very early. His kids know the expectations in that household. What if you're not someone who in your family you've had that relationship with your children where you haven't sort of been crisp and clear and started early about the expectations, but now that your adult child is home, you know, you're starting to see the light that maybe you need some of these limits? How do you have that conversation when you've really never had it before and there's no background to fall back on?
Well, one of the things that can make it easier is to use some of these little tidbits from popular culture to just introduce the conversation. So you just played the clip from Girls, you know, to say, "Hey, have you seen this show? And, you know, what did you think about this person cutting the kids off?" Just begin to engage in some conversations about money, and then begin to talk to them about your own feelings and your own situation. That can open the door to it. Talk about some of their friends. You know, use some of those as entrees. But it can actually be helpful to have a formal financial conversation with your family members. So rather than having every conversation in the hallway, you know, or, you know, as someone's running out the door, to say, you know, "Dad and I," or, you know, "my partner and I want to sit down and talk to you about, you know, the whole situation of you moving back home. And, you know, we'd like to see how you think it's going for you, and to be clear about how it's going for us." And then really sit down and talk about the situation. If it's causing financial hardship for you, it's fine to be honest with the child. They may have no idea, you know, that there may need to be some compromises. If it's really about talking about your relationship with your child, it's helpful to be as honest and unambiguous as possible about what you want and need, so that you can maintain a good relationship with your child.
Hmm. Let's take another call now. We have Mike. Mike joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Hi. You know, I really like the previous caller because he's really kind of addressing the same point. But I just want to add is that one of the things that if you get to the point where your kid's coming home after this term with no job and they're going to be living with you for a while, then, and you haven't had the ability or you feel uncomfortable with sitting down and having a very specific, no ambiguity set of rules and conditions set down, then the damage is probably already done. You're going to have a tough time. But for those people that aren't there yet, I think that some of the tips put out there were good, in the sense that once the kid goes off to college or goes off to, you know, serve his country or whatever the case may be, is that it's that interstitial time is where you start to establish that relation that relationship that when you come home as a guest for the weekend. That's fine. You know, you're pretty much life as it is. But when you come home to stay for extended stays, whether it be summer or it be a month long over the holiday breaks, is that's where you should be practicing the, okay, you know, you now live at college. You now have that life at college. You're acting as an adult, supposedly. When you come home on that summer break or you come home on that holiday break, you know, here are the things that, that you should be doing to help out with the household. You know, you should be mowing the lawns. You should be doing this, that, and whatever. The things that, well, you probably should have been doing as a kid anyway, but there's no ambiguity now.
Right.
This is your task. If you're going to live in the house and soak it up for the next 3 months, these are your tasks.
Yeah, what do you think about Mike's idea, Susanna?
I agree with you. I think it's important to start to lay that conversation out before the situation happens. And there was a fantastic book I read several years ago called Stop Treating Me Like a Child, But First, Can You Lend Me Some Money, right? And this book actually said that sometimes maybe parents enable their children to have financially irresponsible behavior. They feel guilty expecting their kids to step up to the plate. And unconsciously, that sends a signal to the kid that maybe you don't think they can. And I think parents need to understand their own motivations. So, you know, when you're talking about you're coming back home, you are an adult now, so you should be thinking about how you're going to contribute to the household, mowing the lawn, you know, doing some chores, things like that. It's important to say to your child, you know, we don't see you as a teenager anymore, so you chipping in for these things kind of as a courtesy, it's a different situation. You are an adult living in this household. What are the things that you think you can do to contribute? And I think when you start treating your adult child like an adult, it can send a very positive message of your confidence in their ability to do the things that they need to do to be a financially responsible adult.
You know, it occurs to me that having these multi-generational households, you know, with adult children as well, is pretty common in other parts of the world, not so much in America. But do you have any idea how these sorts of things that we're discussing today get handled elsewhere?
Yeah, it's very different in different cultures. So if you think about India, Mexico, some of these places where the expectation is that the child will actually stay at home in many cases until they, you know, they're married or they have kids or, you know, they're in their late 30s, there's in some ways a different cultural dynamic, right? So that that kid is not still necessarily being treated as a kid. They're being treated as an adult who's living at home and doing the things that they need to do. So it may be a very different conversation, and it's difficult to compare that. In our culture, on the other hand, the norm for several generations has been that people move out and they're on their own. So when someone moves back home, it can be complicated. People can feel like they're not doing a good job, that this is a fallback versus saying, you know, in many ways, this can be great for everyone. So we've been talking about post-college age kids, but there's a lot of research that also indicates that, you know, people who are in, you know, their upper 20s and 30s may be moving back home even with their own children. And having the parent help with childcare, that can be a godsend. You know, it can be a good thing socially. It can be a good thing financially for families to live together. But every single household situation is individual, and every family needs to have their own conversation about their feelings and about the finances.
Right. So it's got to be individual coming from your family.
Yeah, so I don't think it's fair to say, well, in other countries they do it this way, so it should work for us or not.
Right?
They've had conversations about that all along the way. What conversations are you having?
Another call here. Will is joining us next from Green Bay. Hey, Will.
Hi. What prompted my call is the whole question about charging rent. But we're going to jump back a couple generations, and I'm dealing with my 81-year-old mother-in-law finally sold her family house with no plans of what she was going to do next. So she moved in with us. And 2 years later, she's still trying to figure that out. She makes trips to some of her other children, with the idea that, well, I'll look around where they live. Maybe I'll find a place. And my wife and I are clearly divided on whether we should charge her rent. My wife feels we should, and I feel, you know, she's sort of a lost soul trying to find her place, and until, you know, she makes that next move, that we should just, you know, let her stay in our house. I'm just looking for what's the general view as to whether you should charge rent to a parent returning to your house.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Susanna?
Well, it's fascinating that you ask about should you charge mom rent as well as should you charge your adult child rent. You are not alone in asking this question. In the Money Across Generations study that we did, I'd mentioned before we found 93% of American baby boomers are providing some sort of financial support to their adult children, but 63% of American baby boomers are providing some sort of support to their elderly or aging parents as well. So this is happening all over, and I'm not sure that any couple has figured it out, just as you're saying you and your wife disagree on the situation. One of the things we learned in that study was that when people are providing support to their elderly parents, it tends to be for pretty essential expenses, though. So rent, mortgage, food, utilities, that often when a parent moves home, they're actually in a much more difficult financial situation, whereas a kid who moves back home may be strapped, but they have the option of employment. They're at a place in their life where they have the opportunity to get a job, whereas maybe your stepmother does, or your mother-in-law does not. I can't give you an answer about what the right thing for you and your wife is, but I think it's helpful to have the conversation with the mother to find out a little bit more about her intentions and the situation and how she's feeling about it. Have you guys had a conversation with her at all about how she feels about living with you guys or with the others?
Well, we clearly have been having conversations on and off, and she's clearly in a position to do pretty much whatever she wants. You know, she sold a house that made, you know, tremendous amounts of money for her. The situation is she sold the house in New York. We live in Wisconsin now, and she did come out to Wisconsin, leaving everything that's familiar to her. But after 2 years, Green Bay is becoming quite familiar, but she's constantly saying she's going to go back out east.
So let me ask you another question. When she does come to live with you in Green Bay, for, I assume it's for extended periods of time?
Yes, she normally spends the winter. Well, so far, she spent the last 2 winters in Green Bay.
Is she chipping in for other expenses besides rent? Are you paying for the grocery bill, the entertainment, everything?
She barely opens her pocketbook. So, you know, there's that whole issue of she just doesn't spend any of her money. She'll blame it on the Depression, but my mom was raised in the Depression. Before she died, she had no problem spending the inheritance.
And it differs by individuals. But, you know, one of the things that we find interesting, you know, in a company of financial advisors is that sometimes if the conversation doesn't happen, then the person in their mind knows, well, you know, maybe this isn't, you know, maybe something should change. But until the other person brings it up, why would I cut off the gravy train? Why would I say, you know, I want to suddenly give you, or I suddenly want to pay you for things? If somebody is concerned about their finances, very frugal, a Depression-era person, they, just like a kid, you know, saying, well, wow, I'll just keep living at home rent-free till mom and dad tell me I have to chip in. You know, chances are that your mother knows that, or your mother-in-law knows that she's doing a little bit of freeloading. So I guess my advice to you, and I'm interested to hear what other callers have to say, is that it might make sense for you to sit down and say, this has been going on for 2 years, and we, you know, we love you, we love having you around, but this is creating some additional expenses, and we'd really like to talk about how we're going to handle the financial part of this going forward. Hmm. If you're going to be a member of our household, you know, let's talk about what that looks like and see what happens. How does that make you feel when you think about having that conversation?
My wife would be, ready to have that conversation tomorrow. I guess I just feel differently, that I feel odd charging an 83-year-old woman who's, you know, clearly not sure what she wants to do next, rent. I figure, you know, it's our turn to support her. She's, you know, supported my wife when, you know, she was growing up. You know, I used to give money to my mom, whether she needed it or not, just as a payback.
Is the real issue here the difference of opinion between you and your wife?
That and the reluctance of my mother-in-law to pay, if she was to pay anything, would be not anywhere near, I guess, what my wife feels she should.
So it sounds like there are probably some additional conversations for the three of you to have. And
do you make house calls, Susanna? It sounded so easy when you said it before. I thought, what could go wrong? It sounded so reasonable.
You know, I'll make one other suggestion. Sometimes it's very difficult to navigate these conversations. As you're pointing out, the emotions around it are very complicated, and that can cloud some of the more business-like, you know, aspects of the conversation. We've found that sometimes having an objective third party come in and facilitate that conversation, whether it's between the spouses or whether it's between other family members, can be helpful. So having a financial advisor, you know, as a person who can help give that message, if there's a financial need, that can often, you know, be a very helpful conversation, because you're really integrating this person into your own financial plan, right? You have a third party who was not on the payroll before, who's now part of your financial life. You know, you and your wife would do well to agree on, you know, what are the trade-offs you're going to make? You know, are you going to be okay with this, or are you going to have that conversation? So having engaging a financial advisor, thinking about having that person become part of the conversation, for some people, that can really take some of the pressure off. That can be very helpful. Then I don't have to make a house call, but you can find somebody who could assist you with that conversation.
What I wonder is, when you're having these conversations, Will, with his mother-in-law and his wife, and by the way, Will, I wish you well with that. I wish we could hear what happens with it. It sounds like a interesting and difficult situation, but I think we've got some good advice to go on. But when Will is having that conversation, or when you are with your grown child who's moved home, does it help to have some sort of emotional connection before you begin, instead of just sitting down and saying, we need to talk about money, to say, we love you, we care so much about you, you're so important to us, and we need to talk about money?
I love that that lead-in. I think it's absolutely important to reinforce why you're having that conversation, and it's not because you don't love and want to support your kid. In fact, it may be because you love and want to support your kid as a parent who believes that helping them get on track with their life is an important thing. But you obviously want to convey that you recognize, you know, the difficulty of the job market right now, some of the burdens that they do have on them, whether that's student loan, you know, debt or other things. So it's a fine balance, but yes, I think saying first, we love you, we care about you, we want you to be okay, we'll do everything we can to help you emotionally, but let's talk about what we expect of, you know, from you about the financial situation, or let's talk about how having you back home is impacting our own financial situation, and what are we going to do about that?
Our guest this hour is Susanna De Vaca. She's Vice President of Wealth Strategies at Ameriprise Financial. And we're talking about the conversations that are probably happening all over the country right now as adult children move home and parents need to decide how to handle the new financial burden and what part of it should be picked up by the child, the grown child moving home. And we're wondering about your experiences at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you today. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk with Susanna De Vaca, Vice President of Wealth Strategies at Ameriprise Financial, talking about her recent article in Time Magazine wondering when your adult child moves home, should you charge them rent? And how do you have those conversations, which can sometimes be difficult or loaded, particularly if you haven't had them before? And we will take our next phone call now and go to Bud in Saner. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. How about you?
Suzanne, great advice. Financial independence, financial responsibility. It just seems like such a dichotomy from the usual NPR programming where people are always calling in looking for the government to do something for them. Don't you think these same principles need to be applied to those aspects? Thanks for the show.
All right. Thanks, Bud. Susanna?
Well, I think that we believe that financial responsibility is incredibly important for individuals at any age. And, you know, to your point, the government has its place in different aspects of making sure that people have what they need in order to get on track and to get on their feet. But as a parent where your kid is coming back home, I think the question is, you know, what are the different kinds of tools and resources that you can give to your child to help them develop good financial habits and skills? And we've been talking about the conversations you have about them being at home, but, you know, what are the other kinds of things that you can be coaching them about or helping them with? I'd be very interested to hear from listeners some of the things that they've done to teach their kids financial responsibility along the way. One of the things that I think can be helpful is really talking openly to your kids about your adult children when they've moved back home about their goals, not just having them move home, talk a little bit about, I think you need to pay rent, but to sit down with them and say, you know, let's talk about what it is you want to do. How can I be helping you? What are your plans here for being at home? What kind of timeline do you actually have for finding a job, or if they have a job and are just really having a tough time, what are their plans for saving the money so that they can get on their own 2 feet? Letting your kids know how long you can provide support, or, you know, how you might change the situation over time. Those things can be very, very helpful in helping your kids think through the situation. You know, whether we like it or not, interestingly, you know, unless you take it as a elective class, personal financial management really isn't something that is, you know, is a part of the curriculum in college. So, you know, how are kids developing these good financial skills? What's your role as a parent?
Well, thank you very much for your call, Bud. And we move next to Gary in Ripon. Hello, Gary.
Hi. I have a problem, I guess, with what I see as our kind of cultural schizophrenia here, because from the very day a child is born, we tell them we believe in progress, you're the new generation, the next generation will have it better than the previous one, etc., etc., the computer revolution has fundamentally changed life, and I think they listen to us and believe us, and then all of a sudden when they get to be in their early to mid-20s, it's like all of a sudden we tell them, well, fundamentally, life is the same as it was for your great-grandparents. We need to decide which it is here.
It's an interesting point. Susanna?
Which do you think it is?
I think life is fundamentally the same. I think we're selling them a bill of goods that basically we're lying to them.
You think that we are setting up the young people in our society not to be hard workers or think about being financially responsible?
Yes, because we're telling them they don't have to be. You should have life better than I had it. You don't have to worry about bills and all that stuff like I did.
Well, I think it's always incredibly positive for a parent to provide a sense of optimism to their children that they have choices in life, that they can do what they want, that, you know, they are sort of the master of their own destiny. But at the same time, much to the point you're bringing up, you know, as a parent or as a teacher or as a boss, you know, of young people, it's important also to let them know, yeah, you're going to have to play a part in that. It won't all be handed to you. You know, you're going to have to get up off the couch and go find the job, whether that means it's your summer job in high school, maybe a job in college, and a job after college. You know, you're going to have to expend some effort as well. So I think what, you know, what I'm hearing you say is that kids are getting very mixed messages, and maybe they're not hearing the latter. They're thinking it's all going to come to them without putting in the kind of blood and sweat that, you know, that we did or that our parents did. So how would you encourage people to step up that message?
Well, I don't think we're giving them mixed messages. We're giving them two different messages. We're giving them one message from the day they're born until they're about 23 or 24, and then all of a sudden we're hitting them up with a totally different message, and it's no wonder that they don't understand what's going on here.
So it sounds like your advice is give clear messages to your kids.
And you have to know yourself what you think. Part of the problem here is adults don't know what they think themselves.
And as a society, we may not know
either.
And
as a society, we don't.
Well, we have to, you know, we start off with our optimism, and then maybe we temper it at the end. You know, when it can be a little harsh.
Well, there seems to be a need for a good mix of optimism and realism, right? So maybe some of these young folks have seen in their more formative years, you know, Generation Y saw a positive economy, a good job market, and then boom, you know, a lot of them got to a certain age and all of that, you know, kind of dissolved with the financial environment in the last couple of years. But kids are pretty resilient, and, you know, I think that people, if they feel like they've got a plan, can step up to the plate and make the adjustments. That's, as you point out, has happened in every generation, right? Every generation has had its own economic ups and downs, and, you know, people with fortitude and a plan, and obviously some help along the way, whether, you know, that can be from friends, teachers, family, whatever, you know, they're able to make it.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Gary. And let's see if we can get one or two more calls in before the top of the hour. Let's see, Matt is next in Eau Claire. Hi, Matt.
Hi, good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning.
I have a little different situation. My wife is from Guatemala. And we just brought her two daughters over 2 years ago, which she hadn't seen for 10 years. Her mother has raised those girls, and she's supported them. And now the oldest is 14 and coming up on driver's license time. And I want to buy a car for my oldest daughter. I also want her to have a part-time job so she understands the, you know, the whole American culture that you work for what you get, and you only get out of it what you put into it. Those who do get what they get. And she wants to shelter him from it. She wants to keep him in the house. She doesn't want him to drive. She doesn't want him to have a job. She wants to keep supporting those children. And I think it's doing more harm than it does good, because I think they're going to be unprepared for a very cruel world. And I kind of wanted your insight.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. Susanna?
Very interesting issue. So your wife is from Guatemala, and she's got kids coming there, and you guys have differences of opinion in how you should be teaching them financial responsibility. So, you know, this is a conversation between you and your wife about how to come to a compromise about the best way to apply some child-rearing methods to help them get on track. Have you had the open conversation about coming to a compromise?
And let me just jump in here and say we've only got about a minute left. So, Matt, quickly.
Yes, we have. And we've done small things like I give them allowance and they help their mother and they understand that, you know, how important it is to earn money and how hard it is to make it here. I think that they're going to be ill-prepared, you know. I want them to focus on the school. That's the most important thing. And they're both straight-A students, and they've done extremely well. But my wife still wants to shelter them until they're like 18, 20 years old before they get out of the house.
And, Suzanne, we've got about 30 seconds for your answer.
Well, I think you need a healthy balance, and it sounds like you're on track, that it's important for them to focus on school, but it's also very important for kids to have some kind of work experience or some kind of experience with handling money. If they go off to college with no knowledge of how the real world works financially, I believe that you are correct in assuming that will leave them at a disadvantage. So continue having that conversation about how you balance those and, you know, and just keep working with those kids to find out what is the right, you know, blend of essentially support and financial push.
And we have to leave it there, Susanna. We are out of time, but thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Susanna De Baca, she is Vice President of Wealth Strategies at Ameriprise Financial. Thanks to Brett Jaspers for producing this hour and Rhonda Fanning for on-air production. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network.